This is District Sentinel Radio, the newscast of record for the left. I'm Sam Sachs.
I'm Sam Knight.
We are in the Harper Is a Good Girl studios in Washington, D.C. Check out the website, districtsentinel.com. If you listen carefully, you can hear intern Nate breathing into the mic. Hello.
How's it going, Sam? Nice to see you guys, too.
It's going well. It's going well. That was me telling you to breathe quieter. You took it as me telling you to breathe louder.
Folks, I don't know if you heard the news, but Miranda is about to do it.
Are you a Miranda? Are you Carrie? Who are the other characters?
Charlotte?
The joke doesn't work.
Charlotte.
I know two characters.
There's a third.
Is there Kim? What's the other one?
Are you a Mr. Big?
Well,
I'm Mr. Big.
Anyway, Cynthia,
I don't know.
Cynthia Nixon, who played Miranda in the hit series Sex and the City, is running for governor of New York.
She has good positions, apparently, too.
I see a lot of people with good politics excited about this move, and I don't know a lot about New York politics. I know Cuomo sucks.
Yeah, it's unclear if this is because Cynthia Nixon has really good positions or if people just hate Cuomo so much.
I will say I saw Alan Dershowitz getting really pissed off saying she has bad positions on Israel, which must mean she has really good positions on Israel. So I think this is probably going to be pretty good.
I watched her ad. It was good. It was a good ad. You know, she said the right things. She actually, in some of her press releases, it looks like she's using Jeremy Corbyn's language. She said something like, you know, this is for the many, not the few. So,
whoa.
Good sign there.
Oh, shit. I saw Zephyr Teachout, who ran for Congress in New York and lost to a Republican. I think it was a pretty conservative district, but she ran and she was fairly progressive and she was pretty excited about Cynthia Nixon. So I don't know. Call the rant line if you have Cynthia Nixon opinions. I want to hear them.
202-684-6108. Intern Nate was popping off yesterday about Alan Dershowitz claiming that his time in the barrel is next.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to get into that. It was a conspiracy theory. Okay. We are definitely not going to talk about the Jeffrey Epstein
the Lolita Express. I knew this was going that way. Jesus Christ.
No, okay. Yeah, this is a theory.
Let's just go on with the newscast. Let's just go on with the newscast.
Thank you.
Gawker has been right about everything.
We've got a ton of bracket news off the top. I know the two Sams have thoroughly busted brackets. Mine busted even worse than yours.
Well,
lost three out of my four Final Four teams and both my finals teams.
As a wise man said to me today, everyone's bracket is busted at this point.
Yes. Henry L. Best, currently in the lead over at the Sentinel Bracket Challenge. Winner gets to name the studio for a month. Top three get t-shirts. Yep. Henry L. Best over there. But he's in trouble because he picked Michigan State to win it all. Looking real good right now is ESPN fan 385-85303. Not sure if that's their name or if that was just generated. I'm guessing it was just generated. They picked Kentucky. And we also have Brandy Beans H. Hello,
Brandon.
Brandy.
What's up?
And large sports fan lingering. They both picked Villanova. And we have Diet Pepis hanging around there with a Kansas pick, too.
Is that pronounced PBs?
Maybe.
I have an outside chance at finishing at least toward the higher end of the standings because Purdue is still in this, baby. My winner. My champion pick, Purdue, the Purdue Boilermakers, they're still fighting.
Good luck with that. Speaking of tournaments, Dude Slater calling into the show later with just a recap of what was the awful pundit tournament. We all know Ben Shapiro won that thing last week, so we'll hear from Dude Slater on that. Which reminds me, our own tournament, the worst tweet ever tournament, the worst damn tweet ever tournament, starts Thursday. We almost have the brackets finalized. A couple finishing touches left to do. That'll be unveiled Thursday. Voting will open Thursday to correspond with the third round of the NCAA tournament. Actually, it's the fourth round. It's the fourth round because the play-in games count as round one.
No, they don't.
They do officially count as round one. I don't think they should, but they do. It's weird. All right. Shout out to our subscribers on Patreon, patreon.com/districtsentinel. $5 a month gets you access to bonus content. It also gets you a haiku. And we've got a couple to read right now. This one is for Bradley. The click of a bic, the gurgling of the bong, symphony of weed.
Thank you, Bradley. I like to add the percussion when I cough.
The percussion of the cough.
This is for Victor. It's probably my most irony poisoned one yet. What could be greater than some golf with a gator, shelter, clothes, and food?
Is that a Happy Gilmore reference?
That is a reference to Gator Golf, the game. It was a game where you'd putt a golf ball into a hole shaped like a gator.
Thank you, Victor.
At the
arcade?
No. Just it was like they sold it at like toy stores. And the song went, "What could be greater than golf with a gator?" So,
a lot of things,
basically.
This one is for Michael. Somewhere out there is a creature we've never seen, a frog with feathers.
Hope springs eternal. Thank you, Michael. This is for Alf Die Welle. Crimson hues abound. Another tragedy strikes. Red Gatorade spill.
Thanks, Alf Die Welle. Did you spill some Gatorade earlier?
No. Just to be clear.
It's not autobiographical.
Nope. There has been no Gatorade. I haven't bought red Gatorade in a while.
That's my favorite flavor.
Oh, no, man. I'm not going to talk about my favorite flavor.
I know. Why? Because it looks like cum?
Yeah. I call it the cum Gatorade, but it's actually cherry flavored.
Yeah, it's good. Thank you to all our new subscribers, patreon.com/districtsentinel. Contribute what you can. It helps keep this podcast going. It's Monday, March 19th.
And we're very clearly unemployable, so please help.
Monday, March 19th, 2018. Here's the news. Facebook has suspended data firm Cambridge Analytica after news broke that the company had stolen the private information of some 50 million users and used that data to help the Trump campaign win the 2016 election. It was reported last Friday that special counsel Robert Mueller has subpoenaed the company for documents. Essentially, the firm used data harvested from millions of Facebook users who took a personality quiz on the site. That data, extremely intimate data, was then used to target voters and campaign stops by the Trump campaign. According to former Cambridge Analytica employee Christopher Wiley, who's blowing the whistle on all this, quote, "I built Steve Bannon's psychological warfare mindfuck tool." Wiley added, quote, "We exploited Facebook to harvest millions of people's profiles and built models to exploit what we knew about them and target their inner demons. That was the basis that the entire company was built on." Jared Kushner, who was in charge of Trump's digital operation, was responsible for linking the campaign up with Cambridge Analytica. And Steve Bannon used to be the director of the company. Now, it's also been revealed that Cambridge Analytica could be engaged in politicking beyond data modeling. News Channel 4 in the UK caught the British firm's CEO, Alexander Nix, bragging about how the company is secretly involved in elections around the world using honey traps like Ukrainian women or fake bribes. Here's Nix explaining one scheme, quote, "We'll offer a large amount of money to the candidate to finance his campaign in exchange for land, for instance. We'll have the whole thing recorded, we'll blank out the face of our guy, and we post it on the internet." Again, this is the firm that worked intimately with the Trump campaign to win in 2016. God damn, there were a lot of rat fuckers on that ship.
The Supreme Court is taking up another case on immigration detention. Justices announced today that they're granting cert in Nielsen versus Priap, a battle over the status of immigrants who committed crimes after their release from prison. At the heart of the litigation, whether or not an immigrant is exempt from mandatory detention requirements under federal law if they are not taken into custody by immigration officials immediately after finishing their sentence. As Bloomberg noted, Moni Priap, the respondent in this case, is a documented resident who came to the U.S. as a baby in 1981 after his family fled the Khmer Rouge. Priap was put into deportation proceedings in 2013 after he was convicted of battery. But he has argued, and successfully at this point, that the removal orders were unlawful since battery is a non-deportable offense. The deportable offense on his record came last decade when Priap served time for two counts of marijuana possession. Upon his release in 2006, he was not detained by Homeland Security, and now the Supreme Court will rule on whether or not that matters in ICE's bid to kick Priap out of the country. Recently, justices ruled that those facing deportation proceedings could be held indefinitely without bond hearing. In that case, Rodriguez v. Jennings, the Supreme Court overruled a decision from the liberal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and that's also where Priap's case comes from. Not looking great for him and for immigrants generally under the Trump administration and the Roberts Court.
If you hashtag stand with the FBI, you hashtag stand with the surveillance of Black Americans.
Also, stand against the wall.
Has stand with the FBI really been trending?
Yeah. It's ever since
Benjamin Wittes
and McCabe and shit like that. Oh my God.
Do not click on that hashtag, whatever you do. It's fucking hell.
Anyways,
documents obtained in a lawsuit and reported by The Intercept show federal law enforcement agencies tracking at least one Black Lives Matter activist on their way to the 2014 Ferguson protests. These documents also show FBI agents planning and discussing a stakeout of activists in Ferguson itself. This is not the first time it's come out that the feds monitor Black Lives Matter, but these new revelations are notable, one, because they show physical surveillance, and two, the allusion in a few documents to something called the, quote, race paper.
Stop right there. Just let that hang.
The race paper
is what it's
literally called.
This is an official name.
It's a colloquial name.
Yeah, to be clear, they're not like putting down stats for the next horse race.
This is the colloquial term. These documents are heavily redacted, but it's the subject line of one of the emails that the lawsuit obtained. And it appears to be, the actual document itself appears to be some kind of internal document that the DHS uses to analyze individuals' propensity for radicalization, which is obviously disturbing because that's something you usually associate with foreign terrorists, not domestic activists.
I would also say it's usually something you associate with garbage science as well. Quite frankly, this sounds like security officials trying to intellectualize
bigotry,
calipers, like fucking skull measuring.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot is unclear exactly at this point what this, quote, race paper is. It's just alluded to in these documents, but the organizations that filed the initial lawsuit that got these documents revealed, the Center for Constitutional Rights and Color for Change, they filed a lawsuit today regarding the race paper, so we may get some more information about that soon. And just as a note, the surveillance noted in these documents dates from the Obama years, obviously. But the discussion of the race paper occurred last year when John Kelly was head of DHS, which is obviously concerning given what we already know about this administration's interest in looking at, quote, Black identity extremists.
Yeah, I wonder if any of this has to do with all the Ferguson activists that have turned up dead under suspicious circumstances in recent years. Yo, it pays to snitch, something that the two Sams have been saying for a while. The Securities and Exchange Commission just paid out its largest whistleblower reward in history. Two individuals who blew the whistle on Merrill Lynch's misuse of customer cash were awarded $83 million, the SEC announced on Monday. The whistleblowers uncovered a series of illegal trades executed by the bank over numerous years, leading to Merrill to have to pay up $450 million to the SEC in a settlement. As part of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform Act passed in 2010, whistleblowers who reveal financial crimes can get a cut of the penalties the SEC collects. $83 million is by far the largest whistleblower award to date. The previous record was a not too shabby $30 million. Bankers who hate their job, need I say any more? It's like winning the lotto.
Blow the whistle.
I couldn't help but laugh at the top of that segment because we very smoothly transitioned from a segment about how the FBI sucks into one leading with snitching is actually good.
To be clear, snitching on banks.
Yes, snitching to regulators, to economic regulators. Update from a story InterNate has been talking about for the past few months. Pennsylvania Republicans have been officially owned. Today, federal judges rejected a challenge to congressional districts that were drawn by the state Supreme Court. The map was drawn after Pennsylvania's top court, SCOTOP? Because you know how you call the Supreme Court SCOTUS? Can you call it SCOTOP?
Sure.
All right. Well, SCOTOP ruled that districts were illegally gerrymandered by Republicans. Then, hours after federal judges affirmed the SCOTOP decision, the SCOTUS said it would not take up Republicans' case, leaving them with zero legal recourse. Unlucky. ABC News said Democrats should expect to pick up 3 to 5 seats under the new map.
Nice.
That is the newscast on this Monday. But before we go, the awful pundit tournament concluded at the end of last week. We had Twitter's @DudeSlater calling in regularly to update us on the tournament. And now that it's over, we've got one more message here from Dude Slater with some final thoughts.
Hey guys, it's Dude Slater. I'm calling in to announce and congratulate the winner of the awful pundit tournament, Ben Shapiro. He's the bottom of the barrel, and it's not far-fetched to think he could become a real dynasty in this tournament, a perennial in Cactifor. When you did the interview with me at the beginning of the tournament, you said you wanted to know what we learned from this. To help answer this question, I asked the tournament participants to write an essay explaining who they think they are, and I'm going to read that now. Dear Dude Slater, we accept the fact that we had to sacrifice 3 weeks in the bracket for whatever it is that we did wrong. What we did was wrong, but we think you're crazy for making us write an essay telling you who we think we are. You see us as you want to see us, in the simplest terms, the most convenient definitions. But we found out that each of us is a shitty op-ed writer, a gladiator boy, and whatever Kurt Eichenwald is, a gun babe, and a war criminal. Did that answer your question? Sincerely, the Awful Pundit Tournament.
Yeah, I'd say that's it's about what we learned. It's about what we learned.
I was deep in reflection there, and looking forward to next year's tournament.
Yeah, good work, Dude Slater. As Sam Knight said, we are looking forward to next year's tournament. And again, reminder, our own Worst Tweet Ever tournament starts Thursday. That's the show. Call the Rant Line, 202-684-6108. Sponsors include the Congressional Dish podcast, hosted by Jen Briney. Find it at congressionaldish.com. Another sponsor, levelnews.org. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or tune in by searching for District Sentinel Radio. Give us a review, give us a rating, tell your friends to listen. We're back tomorrow for the newscast. We're in D.C., so you don't have to be.